I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George. Last week we did Tradition 10, and the long form of Tradition 10 reads that no AA group or member should ever in such a way as to implicate AA, express an opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one. Concerning such matters, they can express no views whatever. Last week I talked mostly about inside controversy. I believe there's two kinds of controversy. There's the outside controversy, and I believe when you're in a group, there's plenty of inside controversy. People tell you what you can do, what you can't do. And if we follow the traditions, there's no member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know that have been thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know lots of members that are members of Alcoholics Anonymous that were asked to leave certain groups because of their behaviors in meeting, which was not conducive to recovery, and they were asked to go to other meetings, but they were never thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one of the good things, that's one of those issues of we don't have a right to tell somebody how to behave. There's a thing that I always think about that I was taught. It doesn't matter what we did, what we do, or what we're going to do in the future. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when we say we are, and no one has a right to throw us out. Unless our behavior, and this is where other things such as Robert's Rules come in, is not conducive to the group as a whole, and the group can ask us to leave that group, but send us to another group because we don't belong there. And that's one of the good things, because that keeps us in carrying the message to the person who is still sick and suffering, or the alcoholic who still suffers. We get into Tradition 10 last week, and the thing has to do with outside opinions. Well, what's an outside opinion? The one thing I didn't finish up with last week, because I wanted to save it for this week, if something is going to make you drink, and it's on your mind, whether it be a loss of a pet, a friend, a marriage. We're not marriage counselors we talk about in here. We're not financial people in here. We're alcoholics who don't drink one day at a time. And if that's going to make you drink, if an issue comes up in your life and something like that is going to make you drink, then by all means it's no longer an outside issue. Because once it's going to make you drink, it now becomes an issue that we're allowed to speak about. And, you know, as much as we don't like to talk about drugs in Alcoholics Anonymous, if someone is thinking of using and it'll take them back to a bar, by all means talk about it. And if the people aren't compassionate and considerate for that, then they need to talk to their own sponsors, because we really don't have an opinion on that. But individuals in here, we do. So, you know, that pretty much in the 10th tradition talks about what's an outside issue and what's an inside issue. There is no such thing really as an outside issue if it's going to make you drink. And that's really important to remember, because I came in here, and if it wasn't for the loving tolerance of the people in here, I did not come in here as an alcoholic. I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. I mean, I read the book, I saw lots of definitions and lots of ways of what an alcoholic looked like, but there was never a definition of what an alcoholic is. It showed me lots of ways that people drank or didn't drink or what caused them to come into these rooms, but there's no real definitions. The 12 and 12 talks about five different ways we drink, including the wet alcoholic that walks into a room. You'll get lots of opinions on when somebody walks into a room drunk, whether they belong here or not. Groups have all kinds of opinions on that. Don't stay here today, come back tomorrow when you're sober. Well, I believe if you're drunk and you can't come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, where can you go? That's the way I was taught. I had a sponsor that took me into bars to do 12-step work in 30 days. People tell you, you don't belong around people, places, and things. Again, it's about motives and it's about other things. So, you know, my sponsor had no opinion on what other people thought when it came to medications. He says, what do the books say? Talked about that last week. So, you know, in the Tradition 10, in the 12 Traditions Illustrated, which is one of my favorite little, I like to call it my little cartoon. It's probably the easiest tradition there is in the whole thing. It's all about a guy standing at a podium, and it says, and so, thanks to AA, I have maintained a happy sobriety for 10 years, and I thank you. Now, that would be perfect in itself, but right after it, the next little caption is, but before I leave, I know that I speak for all of AA when I protest the current legislation before the Congress. I refer to that infamous piece of rubbish known as House Bill number X7-11-12, and then it says, and it must not pass. And that to this end, I am sending a telegram in the name of the AA and our group. And of course, then there's a picture on the bottom of everybody fighting and arguing. There's a little guy on the outside in a little raincoat just standing there. And the caption of that is really priceless. And what it says is, how could anyone get sober and stay sober in an outfit like that? You know, the message we carry when we walk into this room and we see people arguing over different things that are not really about Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be someone claiming their religious higher power by name in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be about a political issue, or whether it be about a reform issue, whether it's about, we don't talk about a wet-dry issue anymore, but we do talk about different treatment centers and we mention places by name. Those are really outside issues and they don't really have a place in here. I've been here for a bunch of weeks now, and the one thing I do is try not to mention any of the places that I was when I got sober. I don't mention the halfway houses. I don't mention the different groups, because what I'm doing is it looks like I'm affiliating them with Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the things I do in this particular meeting, because I know it is being put up on the internet, is I don't use my last name, and this is a closed meeting. And as Dr. Bob used to say, it's just as wrong not to give your last name at a closed meeting as it is to give it at an open meeting. And that's going to bring us to the 11th tradition, which we're going to talk about a little bit about that. Getting past this, and that's all it says about tradition 10. What's an outside issue? To me, it depends on if you want to be politically correct or politically not correct. Love and tolerance is our code. I have to be tolerant of the newcomer who comes in here and talks about drugs because they don't know better. They haven't learned about unity yet. And that's where sponsorship is a key. And that's why I'm grateful for the sponsor I had. But the 10th tradition gives us some really good questions in the checklist, the AA checklist. And I love the checklist in tradition 10. Do I ever give the impression that there really is an AA opinion on anti-abuse? Tranquilizers, doctors, psychiatrists, churches, hospitals, jails, alcohol, the federal government, legislation of marijuana, vitamins, Al-Anon, and Alateen. It's a good question. I go to meetings where I think there are some opinions, and when I first got here, I thought that's what AA stood for. And I had nothing to do with AA. Those were individual opinions. All I have is my experience and my own opinions. And when I sit up here, I have to be very careful because someone up there may think I'm speaking for AA, and I don't. I just give you my experience and my journey through these traditions, through the different sponsorship I had over the years. Can I honestly share my own personal experience concerning any of those without giving the impression that I'm stating an AA opinion? Last week I talked about coming into these rooms real early on and was on a medication. And it was suggested that if I'm on that kind of medication, I was taking speed and I wasn't sober. So I didn't take the medication. It was an antipsychotic medication. It was an antidepressant at the time. And what ended up happening is I had a seizure in these rooms. And I had a wonderful sponsor who says, what did the big book say? And I didn't know what the big book said. At 4 weeks or 5 weeks of sobriety, I had no idea what the big book even meant. I thought it was a big book, and it really was when they made it. And then he showed me that part in the big book where it talks about that we go to the good doctor and the good psychiatrist. And that was my first experience with this tradition, about someone in the room had an opinion who isn't a doctor. There's lots of doctors in Alcoholics Anonymous, but none of them are physicians. And if they are physicians and they're practicing medicine in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told, and this is my opinion, run like hell. That's what I was taught, and that's what I believe today. Because if I need to go to a doctor, I need to go outside of this room to get that kind of help. Did I go to a therapist? Absolutely. I went to therapists because I needed outside help with other issues. Did I have to go to someone for legal issues when I was dealing with my ex-wife? Absolutely I did. And I didn't come in these rooms and try and give somebody advice on a marriage, because if you want to know how to not to have one, I will tell you how to ruin two marriages, because I've done that. I'll tell you how not to have those things. So I had to go outside of these rooms to learn that. And I had a lot of opinions about that when I got in here, because I thought you guys were all nuts and didn't know what you were talking about. But if I wanted to become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, there were certain things I learned about unity. And it always goes back to me, to that first tradition. It says, what in AA history gave rise to our 10th tradition? And that was really the Washingtonians and our 5th tradition, and it talked about it in the 12 and 12 a lot. It talks about it in a couple of places. Have I had a similar experience in my own AA life? What would A be without this tradition? Where would we be? We probably wouldn't be sitting here right now without that tradition. And that's an opinion, mine, not AA's. Do I breach this or any of the supporting traditions in a subtle, perhaps unconscious ways? I probably do, because I am pretty much out there and I give my opinions quite freely, especially if you ask me for it. Don't invite me in if you don't want to know what I think. If you invite me in, expect to hear something you might not like, and expect to hear what my experience is. Do I have opinions? Usually when I have them, I will try and tell you, this is my opinion, but first I will tell you this is my experience. And, you know, I had a phone call today from somebody. They're sponsoring someone who's married with a child, and they don't not married, and they don't have a child. And they're asking me how they should sponsor them. And I said, well, I would suggest you send them to a room, because I have that experience. When I was asked to give my children up legally by my sponsor, you should go to a room and raise your hand and find out what other men had to give up their children, how they did it without drinking. So that was not an opinion. That was very good. Good, sensible suggestion that I took. So when they came to me today and gave me this thing about how do they deal with someone who can't get together because they're married and their children and their schedule's opposite their spouses, I said, well, you just have them go to a meeting, raise their hand, and find other people who have been in the same situation. And what did they do to find that balance and not drink through it? And that's the way I was taught. So I don't have an opinion on that. But AA has shown me a way to live through that. And that was very important. So again, my opinion is raise your hand in a room and make it a question. Then sit back and listen for the answer, because someone in the room has had an experience with anything that we go through. How can I manifest the spirit of this tradition in my personal life outside of AA and inside of AA? I do my best not to jump in. If it's not true, I was told not to say it. And if it's not mine, I was told not to take it. That was an opinion my sponsor gave me to have when I got here. Especially the not true, don't say it, because I don't have to be liked by everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have my own opinions on how some people may think of me, and that doesn't really matter what they think of me. I was told that's none of my business. That's God's business. So the 10th tradition gives me a lot of things that I can work with. And if I'm practicing a 10th tradition, what I'm really doing, if I don't have an opinion on how someone's behaving, whether they should be or shouldn't be in a relationship, how they should handle that relationship, should they be going out when they've got less than a year, shouldn't they? I don't really have an opinion on that. I was told if you can live with the consequences, you can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you don't pick up a drink over it. 90 meetings in 90 days, we talked about. That is not AA. That comes originally from the Salvation Army. And then from the Salvation Army, which is something, that was how they got beds from the Salvation Army. And that became something that Ernest Kurtz, who is a therapist who wrote a book called Not God and the Spirituality of Imperfection. He was the one who wrote his first 90 meetings in his first 90 days, gave it to the Johnson Institute. It went to a lot of treatment centers, and it became part of our language and something we do. In the old days, it would be pretty hard when there was one meeting in Akron once a week, and the following week, the next one was in New York, to have 90 meetings in 90 days. They got together throughout the week, but there was only one meeting a week between the two. So if you go back to the beginnings, you know, how do you do those things? My sponsor used to say, I said, well, how many meetings do I need a week? There's an opinion that my sponsor gave me. He said, you only need two, but I don't know which two you need, so go every day and tell me which two you needed, because there's enough meetings here that I can go every day. So, you know, those are things that, you know, individually, those are things that hooked me into being more active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So now we get from that, now we talk about the more interesting traditions, because there's a lot of opinions on this tradition in itself. And Tradition 11, out of the large, serious public relations experience, reads as follows. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. It does not say TV. I go to a lot of places and meetings, and I hear they say films and TV. Well, if you look at and it's a field I come from, if you talk about films, films is video, by standard it's pictures, and audio is what TV is. So it's films is audio and video. Audio and video is television. It's not in there, and the reason it's not those two words, those two letters aren't in our tradition, because if they wanted to change the tradition, anything, a comma, a period, a sentence, add in computers, add in TV, they'd have to give 6 months to every group in the world, not just in the United States, in the world, to vote on it, and then they would need two-thirds of all the registered groups throughout the world in order to change one comma. So we don't do much changing, and that's where we get into the concepts and the general services, and that's what that's about. You know, and it's just a very interesting thing. So when you get to this thing of attraction and promotion, I have some experiences with both, and I've been in places where they promoted meetings. They didn't last very long because there wasn't it was more of personalities than principles, and meetings like that seemed to fall by the wayside or split up into other meetings. Going to the traditions, and I'm going to roll back the time a little bit here. In 1948, Providence had been looking after the public relations of Alcoholics Anonymous. It can scarcely have been otherwise. Though there were more than a dozen years old, hardly a syllable of criticism or ridicule has ever been spoken of AA. Somehow we have been spared all the pains of medical and religious controversy, and we have had good friends both wet and dry, right and left. Like most societies, we were sometimes scandalous, but never yet in public. From all over the world, naught comes from being keen sympathy of downright admiration. Our friends of the press and radio have outdone themselves. Anyone can see that we are far way to be spoiled. Our reputation is already so much better than our actual character. Now think about the character of early Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill was a promoter. He was breaking his anonymity at every level. Dr. Bob, if it was up to Bill, we would be all over the newspapers and the press, and he was running around with his pictures in the newspaper and the press. Not that his name had to be there. That's a breach of, in the spirit of anonymity. Now, why is it written the way it's written? Bill was very good at being very public. There was another person in AA who was also very public, a woman by the name of Marty Mann. Between Bill and her, there was a lot of anonymity breaks. There's a lot of talk about it throughout our history and throughout our literature. And because of their anonymity breaks, there was a whole bunch of other things that happened. One of the things that happened, there was a guy that came up with his own slant on 12 different lectures that he wanted to put on radio, and he had his own religious slant to it. And he came up with this idea, and he turned around and he wrote New York, and New York said, it's not a good idea. And he said, the hell with you, I'm going to do it anyway. And he was going to get paid big money from this insurance company. Well, the trustees at the time turned around and wrote back to him. He says, you have every right under your freedom of speech to go forward with this. But we have every right to write to every group at the time and ask them to write to that insurance company with the kind of publicity they never would want. That series never went on. It's in AA Comes of Age. It's a real interesting story if you haven't read it. And it prevented that from one of the anonymity breaks that could have caused us a lot of damage. Again, you know, there was a famous baseball player whose anonymity was broken. And very shortly after that, he ended up going out and drinking. There's a very famous actress more than one, but I'm not talking about modern days, I'm talking about the beginning. There's a very famous actress who ended up getting 2 Oscars, and after one Oscar performance, she ended up back in an institution, drunk as a skunk, and it made the front page, because she got drunk the night of the Oscars. So, you know, we got to be careful of how we present, where we break our anonymity, and how anonymity is broken. You know, when I got here, you know, I used to think that, you know, I had to be so anonymous that my home group didn't know who I was. You know, I stayed in the back of the room and came in late and left early. Nobody knew who I was. That's not what anonymity is about. Anonymity at that level is not anonymity. You know, it says in our literature that when we're ready, we let our doctors know, our family knows, and because of that, other people may be led to us. And if we don't do that, you know, that is not a breach of anonymity. That is in the spirit of what we're supposed to be doing. But when we get in front of a camera or a radio years ago, now it's a lot different today, and I will say that, because I see lots of people on TV. Now, the difference today is once their face gets on the screen, whatever screen it is, whether they mention the name of the fellowship or not, that's where the anonymity break comes in, because they're showing their face. In the old days, they either wore a little mask or they had a kerchief. If you look at some of the old pictures in the newspapers, they had kerchiefs over their face when they took pictures of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. The other thing is they used to do different kinds of conversations on TV where there would be a screen and you wouldn't know who was talking, so you only saw the shadow or silhouette, and that was a proper use of it. Today, you turn on, and I can name lots of TV programs. Again, I don't want to affiliate that that's what we do, but there are programs where you can see someone will be at a meeting. And there's some famous movies that talks all about Alcoholics Anonymous. That is actually a breach of the anonymity, what anonymity is about. And that is also helping us at the same time. So where is the attraction versus promotion? And it talks about 11th tradition is a sentinel of our lifelines, announcing that where there is no need for self-praise, that it is better to let our friends recommend us, that our whole public relation, contrary to the usual custom, is based on the principle of attraction rather than promotion. Shot in the arm methods are not for us. No press agents, no promotional devices, no big names. These hazards are too great. Immediate results will always be elusive because easy shortcuts to notoriety can generate permanent and smothering liabilities. I always think of Marty Mann, because Marty Mann is one of those people who broke her anonymity, and it was so bad that she almost lost her sobriety over it. And that was bad enough that the groups didn't want to let her into the meetings for a long time. And she's a good example of what a break in anonymity can do. I always think of, there's no big shots, there's no little shots, one shot and we're all shot. And I always hang on to that when we get to this one. There's some circuit speakers we all know. There's some people who speak all over town. There's some people that are pretty famous that speak. Were they hired? And again, we'll go back to that famous actress. She was hired to speak at a lot of conventions. Or she was asked to speak. She wasn't hired. She didn't get paid for that. But the reason she was asked to do that is because of her name, not because of her sobriety. So there we have to be very careful how we break that anonymity and why we break our anonymity. More and more, therefore, we emphasize the principle of personal anonymity as it applies to public relations. Now, I don't want to be anonymous amongst the fellowship. And I say that very openly, because if I'm in trouble, somebody in this room, I would like to call my sponsor and let them know I'm in trouble. Because if somebody in this room doesn't reach out to help me, I may go out and die. So we're not anonymous amongst ourselves. That's real important. And I didn't understand that when I got here for a long time. We ask that each of other in the highest degree of personal responsibility in this respect. As our movement, we have been, before now, tempted to exploit the names of our well-known public characters. We have rationalized that other societies, even the best, do the same. As individuals, we have sometimes believed that the public use of our names could demonstrate the personal courage in the face of the stigma, so lending power to the conviction to the news stories and the magazine articles. Many times during the practice of people telling their stories, the newspapers were more conscious of our anonymity than we were ourselves. They wouldn't tie names to it. And for that, I think we owe a great debt to those people outside of ours that didn't give us those ego-boosting propositions that would lead us right to a bottle. In the 12 and 12, they talk about that new heady wine. They talk about it. But we're not, these are not the laws they once were. Vividly, we are becoming aware that no member ought to describe himself in few view of the general public as an AA-er, even for the most worthy purpose. Least perilous precedent to be set, which would tempt others to do likewise for the purpose not so worthy. There's a guy I know who's a pretty famous baseball player. There's some people in here that probably know him. He's been around the program for quite a while. He played ball, he went out, he got drunk, came in, told everybody he was in the program, went out and got drunk. Now, he's not giving himself a bad name. What ends up happening to someone like that, it's giving AA a bad name. Well, it didn't work for him. What makes you think it's going to work for me? Now, there's a guy who finally got it, and you don't even hear about him anymore. And he's been sober for a while now. Because as you stay here long enough, you don't want to become a public figure in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if, God forbid, you drink, and none of us are immune from that, you know, it's a six-inch ride from that halo we all have to that noose that we may have. Got to watch that halo becoming a noose, because we go out and drink. It's not us that gets the bad name. It's alcoholics that gets the bad name. Anonymous, because we are giving Alcoholics Anonymous a bad name, because some people are well known. To the million of alcoholics who have not yet heard of us, our AA story, we should say greetings and welcome. Be assured that we shall never weaken the lifelines for which we float out to you. In our public relationships, we shall, God willing, keep our faith. Now, my faith was that I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous through a treatment center. They sent me here. The name of the treatment center doesn't matter. What they did is one of our other traditions gave them the ability to do the 12-step work that was necessary to send me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. They sent me to another fellowship as well, but the message didn't catch me in the other fellowship. I found it here. Now, if the other fellowship would have worked, I might be there right now. I don't know. This is where God landed me, and I believe that has a lot to do with it. By the faith of the people in this room that loved me enough to let me be who I was without telling me how to behave in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they let me get away with a lot of nonsense when I got here because I didn't know better. I didn't have any idea what unity was. I didn't know what a loving God looked like or sounded like when I got here. The only thing that I knew that was absolute when I was told that that I absolutely didn't want to drink. That didn't mean I didn't want to do other things, but I didn't want to drink because I didn't want to end up back under a bridge. That's where I came from. When I came in here, my mouth was a sewer, another way about attraction rather than promotion. And every time my mouth would go off, I'd get a smack in the back of the head, and I was told, you're not supposed to talk that way. Garbage in, garbage out. And I didn't understand that, but I understood that, you know, my sponsor made it clear. What if there's a woman in here who was a little older and doesn't know anything about the substances you used by name in an AA meeting or how you did your powdered alcohol or your dry goods, and you start talking about that and all they did was drink? They're not going to relate to you. They're going to go out there and they may drink and die. Do you want to be responsible for that? So I learned what they meant when they say it in a general way. We tell them what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. I didn't know that when I got here. So that was the attraction. So every time I would curse, my sponsor said to me, you know, you talk that way when you're on the street, you're not on the street this way. If you want what we have, you'll do what we did. If you don't want what we have, don't worry, you won't get it and you'll be out there drinking again. And you'll be doing all those other things you were doing. If that's what you want, there's the door. Matter of fact, there's $20. So, you know, that's the way I heard the message, and I didn't want to go out and go back to a cardboard box. It wasn't about, now, I came from a cardboard box. Somebody may have come park place to park bench, you know, somebody may have come out of the house one day, had too much wine, and realized they were an alcoholic, came to a meeting, and hear someone who spoke like I did walk out, and I might have killed them. So I got to be careful of the message I send and how I send that message and how we make attraction. I walked into a jail and there's a guy by the name of Dennis O. As a matter of fact, today he's picking up 49 years in this program. And when I got here, I went into a jail with him and I stopped cursing. And I went into jail and I shared my experience, strength, and hope in a jail. And I sounded like I was a sewer rat. And I walked out and he said, "What the hell are you doing?" And I said, "Why?" You know, I was just trying to get down to their level. He says, "Why do you got to go down to their level? Why don't you let them come up to yours? Because there's certain people in there that don't need to hear that language or that kind of behavior." So I had to learn that from the people in Alcoholics Anonymous before me. And that was the attraction, because I wanted to be like certain people I saw in these rooms and didn't know how to get there. And through the process of steps and then through the process of first working traditions and then applying them and then starting to live them, my life started changing. People who write in saying that we are getting results from the book are likely for good prospects. We shall continue to refer to you in the area when we hear from you. By educating doctors, hospitals, ministers, along the line, we will surely pick up some strong prospects after a bit. Please let us know where we can do to help you out there. In addition to the logistic problems, organizing and finding houses for new groups. There was a problem just who was a promising candidate for Alcoholics in many years before the tradition of attraction and promotion we formulated. In those days, the act of promotion was very much in the order of the day, and the AA pioneers naturally wanted to put their attention and eagerness to helping those drunks who they believed the best chance for recovery. Bill and Hank, we go back to Bill Wilson and Hank Parkhurst, who used to sit and say to the guys when they walk in the room, did you lose your wife? Nope, you ain't. You're not ready yet. Go out and do some more drinking. You still have a job? You're not ready yet. And it was Ruth Hawk who turned around and told them that, you know, we can't do that. We got to have some hope for these people. And, you know, you can do it. You know, they would sit there and take side bets who's going to get it and who's not. And the bottom line of it was that as time went on, the most unlikely candidates stayed sober. And the people they thought that were going to stay sober didn't. One of the examples I always think of is our friend Bert Taylor, who owned the Taylor Shop, who helped get money to get the big book out on a loan. And he lost his Taylor Shop, and he ended up drinking over it. Was that a money issue? Was that a sobriety issue? I don't know. And I don't think anybody really knows why Bert Taylor didn't stay sober, but he didn't. And there's other people that did. You know, we talk about our friend Burrell, who Bill didn't get along with, who is the who put in the agnostic and the atheist, who turned around and went out and got drunk after the group prayed for him to get drunk, and he came back after finding a Gideon's Bible. Nobody ever knows the story of what happened when he found that Bible in a hotel room, and he came back to AA and he stayed sober. The other agnostic was Hank Parkhurst, who never stayed sober. Why some people get it and some don't, I don't know. All I do know is that the attraction of the people that were here when I got here is what kept me coming back here. And that was real important when I got here. In AA Comes of Age, there's a lot to be said about it. A pioneer convinced us the idea of starting a group in a city by radio. It was a local station. And we talked about the 12 lectures. That was not the only group that started over by the radio. There is the call-ins. You hear it today. There's a couple of stations right around here that you there's sobriety stations, and they have radio stations where you can call in. Are they anonymity breaks? Not as long as you're not mentioning your name and, you know, you're doing it in a general way. The people who are running it or running those programs, they may be breaking their anonymity, but not the people calling in, as long as you don't get in there and you do an interview by your full name. Same thing with newspaper articles. There's ways that we are supposed to live by that this is where the letter of the law is very important. The spirit of the law is that I have a right to tell anybody that I'm an alcoholic, but nobody in this room has a right to go outside and tell them that I am. And that was a hard thing for me to get because, I was sitting at a diner up on the out west with a friend of mine, and they were sitting with a lawyer, and I said, oh, you know, how are you, you know? And then somebody came in, and they said, oh, it's nice to see you at the meeting last night. Now, that lawyer did not know they were in this program. And it was very hard to explain, well, what meeting, you know? Got to be careful what you say and who's around you. So when I see someone that's in this program in Publix or somewhere else, I don't go around saying, hey, I'll see you tomorrow night at such and such a meeting. I'll say, how are you doing? Like I would anybody else that I meet. So I got to be really careful of where I break my anonymity and how. Every one of my doctors, here's another one of those personal things. Every one of my doctors know I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. They need to know because of who I am. And some of the things they would give me, I wouldn't be sitting here if I let that happen. And if I didn't have the kind of education I did in Alcoholics Anonymous, do it if I need something, it's something else. But they need to know up front that I'm an alcoholic, and if it's not necessary to give me certain things, please don't. And if it is necessary, please let me know so I can get my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous around me so I don't go out and use that as an excuse to self-dilute myself and then go out and get drunk. So do I have to break my anonymity at that level? That's a choice I make. Some people do, some people don't. I have friends of mine that are professionals. They don't want you to know what they do for a living, and they don't go to some of the meetings. There are special meetings for lawyers and doctors and nurses, and there's a reason for that. And teachers, because if I'm sitting in this room and a teacher walks in and somebody sees their kid in here, their anonymity is at jeopardy, that, you know, that will happen, or therapists, and we know some people that do that for a living outside. So they have special meetings for people like that if they need them. There's a meeting downtown in Fort Lauderdale that I know of every day. And I've been lucky enough to go there, although it's been a pleasure when I did go there. And there are lawyers and judges and professional people that meet there every day. And it's a regular meeting. There's a meeting right around the corner at the college that was started about 14 years ago that continually goes on. So there's a place and a time for those meetings, but you don't have to go around and let the whole world know that you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, there again, it's about the attraction. How did I get attracted to coming into AA? And was it promotion? I'm not sure how I came in this. I always joke around when somebody said, how did I get to AA? Well, the halfway house bus dropped me off at the front door. That's how I got to AA. I sat here for a couple of months and didn't know what I was doing for a while because I was in such a fog. And you know, I didn't know what was appropriate, what unity meant or disunity meant when I got here. So you know, as soon as I could, and I knew I was okay, my family knew right away. I let my sisters and my mom and my mom know, and my family know that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was all better, and they should forgive me, and my life was wonderful, and then they understand, and they said, listen, you've been out of our life for a long time. We're not ready to have you come back. And I was devastated, you know. Came the first Christmas and they didn't want me around, you know. The attraction wasn't there yet because I was still pretty confused about what I was doing. And my sponsor kept saying to me, well, you know, you went over to your family's house and, you know, you didn't have a drink like Christmas or Thanksgiving and you want a pat on the back for something you should have been doing your whole life. He says, you know, you got to let them heal too. So, you know, where do I break my anonymity? That's a personal thing. Anonymity, and it talks about it in our literature. And what it starts talking about a little bit later on, it talks about the extremes. The average newcomer wanted his family to know immediately what he was trying to do. He also wanted to tell others who had tried to help him, the doctor, the minister, the close friends. As he gained confidence, he felt it right to explain his new ALA to his employer and his business associations. When opportunity to be helpful came along, he found that he could talk easy about AA to almost anyone. These quiet disclosures helped him to lose his fear of the alcoholic stigma and then to spread the news of AA existence in his community. Many a new man and woman came to AA as a result of such conversations. I can give you an experience, a personal one. I worked at a restaurant on 10th Street. It's no longer there. It was called the Olive Garden. It's no longer there, so I can mention its name. The Olive Garden. And that particular place, there was a cook. And the manager knew I was in the program because I got the job from somebody else in the program. And the day I went in to go to the job, the guy who got me the job ran out with all the lunch money. So I thought I was going to get fired immediately. And I went over to the manager and said, please forgive me. She wasn't one of us. And she says, no, that's a different issue, not a problem. And I worked there, and I worked there for a while. And then one day at about 10:30, I got a phone call because I lived on 54th Street. And I got a phone call. The police come in. They didn't want to call the cops, but they needed some help. And I got there, and there was a guy who was a cook in the place who ended up getting drunk, and they didn't know what to do. And I sat there with the manager and the cook and someone else from Alcoholics Anonymous, and we sat there from 11 o'clock that night till 5 o'clock in the morning, and we talked to this guy, and me and this other person from Alcoholics Anonymous told him our story. Did he ever get here or didn't he? I don't know. But there's somebody else that I do know who worked in that same place. And Dave is sitting in the back. And Dave knows him because Dave sponsored this guy. This guy was a friend of mine who I used to say whenever I went into work was saving you a seat. And it took about 10 years later and he showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't know where the attraction is. Dave's smiling back there. He knows who I'm talking about. Whether he stayed or not, I don't know. But the attraction was there because there was somebody that he saw, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that sober member was able to pass that message. And he didn't get there through me, but he got here. Did I plant that seed? Was it taking him to meetings? I have no idea how that happens. But I didn't go around promoting Alcoholics Anonymous. I just told him my story and showed him the path, told him where the meetings were I went to. As we went forward, Dr. Bob says it best, that anonymity is true humility in action. And it's something to really think about. You know, if I'm being humble and I'm using the action necessary, doing things without name, I am actually showing a way, giving a light of attraction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not trying to promote it, say, oh, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not something I do. What I will do is, if somebody says, can you help me? I don't know if I can help you, but I can tell you where I got the help, and then I'll bring somebody to a meeting. I've done that many times. Whether they stay or not is none of my business. I've gone to bars many a time with another sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to take someone out of there, or hotel rooms, and all different kinds of situations that a lot of us have been through. And our job is, when we get there, is to tell someone our story. That's the only time we do that. We tell them our story, and the result of that is the attraction. Either they're going to be attracted in these rooms, or they're going to go out there to authorities. A loving God who says, do my will, or alcohol says, if you're not doing God's will, I'm going to kill you. What's your choice? You know, the big book says, you know, either alcohol is everything, you know, God is everything, or he's not. What's your choice? You know, those are the things I have to think about, of how we are attracting each other. We can go into the Rockefeller, we can go into the big book. There's a lot of ways that there is attraction. The big book itself is an attraction to a lot of people. There are people who got sober who've never been into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous who strictly did it through the book and letter writing in those days. I have a friend that was in Costa Rica that I used to write to. Lost her husband, couldn't get off of the island. Through somebody else I know, I started writing back and forth. I'm not the only pen pal they had. I'm not, you know, saying, look at what I did. That's not what this is about. What it was about is that it's one alcoholic talking to another. That's the attraction. It's not about newspaper articles. It's not about someone who's famous. There's a couple of people that are very famous that sit in these rooms, and people don't even know they're famous. There's artists, and there's singers, and there's musicians, and there's all kinds of different people that are around the fellowship that have achieved some notoriety, but that they still have the same playing feet as someone else who has 45 years in these rooms and nobody knows who they are. So you gotta be careful about how I show that attraction to others. You know, how do I make Alcoholics Anonymous attractive to that newcomer? How do I give them the hope that I saw when I walked in these rooms? You know, I always talk about that loving God that I heard in the second tradition. You know, I walked in these rooms and I saw people smiling and laughing. I was miserable and in pain. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want what you guys had. I thought you were all whacked out of your mind. How can you guys be laughing when I was in so much pain? Yet I saw that laughter, and that laughter gave me the want to come back another week. And after another week, I came back another week. And it kept going on until I started being attracted to the people who had that serenity that I thought was people just sleeping in the back. They weren't paying attention. I didn't know what serenity looked like. Those were things I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's only one place where 100% anonymous, and that's at the level of press, radio, and film. We are not anonymous amongst ourselves. If I know someone's in trouble, and I've had many a phone calls, I spent many a night with someone in this room riding around the parking lot chasing down someone. I've had to call cops. The big book talks about what happens when you work with others, you know, and what, you know, what is it, some of the, and there's people that got sober through those incidents. There's people that get sober in jails. There's people that get sober in hospitals, in all kinds of institutions, and come out and stay sober. We're just blessed down here in South Florida to have so many meetings, and there's so much attraction that there's not an excuse not to make a meeting. You know, do I need 7 meetings a week? No, and I haven't been making them because of my health as of late. I've been making 1 meeting a week. I feel very uncomfortable at times with that 1 meeting a week. But yet I have that stability of being in touch with an alcoholic on a daily basis, and that's the attraction. One alcoholic talking to another, and when that happens, there's a loving God that comes into that, and there's the attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't even know was there. I thought it was by going to meetings I was doing good. No, it's not about doing good. It's about getting healthy, and getting healthy is my relationship with God and my relationship with others, and that's the attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous that has me coming back. Thank you for letting me share.